The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. Welcome back to the Mark Steiner Show. How do you take a great idea and turn it into action with successful results? Well, according to Bill Drayton, you need to put a good entrepreneur in charge and give them the tools that they need to succeed. With that idea in mind, he founded Ashoka in 1981. Ashoka is a nonprofit based in Arlington, Virginia, that provides funding and support to entrepreneurs who tackle tough social issues internationally. Bill Drayton and I recently spoke, and I started out by asking him about one of the inspirations for his work, a road trip he took from Germany to India in 1963.
I loved history and geography growing up and hated Latin and math. And you quickly discovered that two-thirds of the world's people live in Asia, and two of the three great historical cultures. And China was, by language and politics, closed, and South Asia, India was, by both of those, very open. And furthermore, the civil rights movement is a Gandhian movement. And when you have been touched by the power of what Gandhi called the truth force, you can see people changing by their own judgment, their own choice. It's just very powerful. And so I wanted to go for India for the longest time. And we couldn't afford planes, but four people getting together, microbus, which turns out at that point to be one of the most solidly built vehicles in history, made it across the dirt roads of Iran and whatnot, and was wonderful assist all the time in India. So we were trying to understand this extraordinary culture at a remarkable moment of rebirth, and also to understand the Gandhian movement. We looked at village decentralization, and that gave me my first, what turned out to be a lifelong exposure to two villages. Ultimately to spending some time with Vinoba Bhave, the person that Gandhi called his guru and who led the non-political, the social change part of the Gandhian movement after independence. It was an extremely powerful set of experiences. And if you know India, it's an extraordinarily open, friendly, hospitable. People like to talk, they like to argue, place. And the only place that even begins to compare to it is where I grew up, New York City, or in terms of just sheer diversity. And you walk down the street and you're surrounded by people who are living all these different lives and coming from different centuries, if not millennia, in terms of people who grew up in absolutely feudal areas, people who are working on the thorium fuel cycle. As it turns out, one of the young who comes from a village that in Haryana state. So it's just an extraordinarily powerful place that influenced me in many ways. You know, what's really important in life? Well, when you watch people, the family you're staying with in this village, and you understand that they're really happy people, and they don't have the wealth we have. And that does make a difference, but what really makes a difference is love and respect. And, you know, that, of course, fits, that's a lesson, and it fits with the Gandhian insight. So all the pieces fit together, and it was just one of those moments where you begin to understand how the world works. And the fact that Indian and Western civilizations are co-equal but different, and the ideas have flowed back and forth quickly over the centuries, millennia, makes it all the more interesting. Ashoka came out of that trip. When you see 100-to-1 difference in per capita income, and it's no longer a statistic, people you know, and if you are an entrepreneur by temperament, you always have to say, well, what are we going to do to close the north-south gap? Well, you know, sophomores don't control a whole lot, and so you automatically have to ask, well, what's the most highly leveraged way of doing that? And the Ashoka idea is really simple. It's what's the most powerful force in the world? It's a big idea, but only if it's in the hands of a really good entrepreneur. It's that combination, a big idea, an excellent entrepreneur, that has moved everything. And what Ashoka does in its simplest foundational level is we find the best ideas, the best entrepreneurs anywhere in the world pretty much now, and help them get started, quit their job, work full-time, test, refine, prototype, build organization, figure out how to explain it, and begin tipping the world around them. We're very good at that. The typical Ashoka fellow, within 5 years, has already changed national policy about 55%, and three-quarters have changed the pattern in their field at the national level, even if they didn't have to change policy, on an average of three different ways. So, this is really fun. You find people who are changing the world. They can't possibly be cynical. You know, it's just too much fun. It's too powerful. And you're expressing love and respect in the highest level. You're really helping the world move in good ways.
Can you, just for people to hear it in a very real human way, two, three stories maybe, whatever we have time for, of the kind of social entrepreneurs you're talking about that actually change, A, an entire society, but B, the immediate world they live in, the kind of people that get these fellowships from Ashoka. To talk about a couple that really kind of are emblematic of that. I'm sure there are many, many, but...
Well, there are 3,000, so there's a lot to choose from.
Yes.
And I just, before I do that, let me just comment that when you listen to these stories, there's no astrophysics involved. Someone gave themselves permission. I give my permission to see a problem, and I am going to solve it. I'm going to use my native problem-solving ability and be patient and persistent. And anyone who's with us can do that. But most people don't give themselves permission. And I'll give you a couple of stories that it's a mistake to think that you couldn't do this. So let me start with a Canadian fellow, Mary Gordon. Hopefully her work will come to Baltimore soon. It's already started in Seattle and 5 other countries. We elected her a fellow about 4.5 years ago. She was a teacher in Toronto, and she saw a problem. She gave herself permission to see a problem. That more and more of the children coming to her class had no way of responding to other children who made them uncomfortable other than with aggression, which, of course, invites aggression back. And every time those children go through that cycle, it gets deeper. And the school becomes a less attractive place, and the probability of their being able to function in our society is going down. She said, this is a big problem. I wanted to solve it, not just for my class, but for all schools,
mm-hmm.
A classic entrepreneur way of thinking. If you're going to change the school system, given its, shall we say, conservative nature, it better be simple and not too expensive. So jumping ahead, she's gone from 2 classes to 14,000 classes in 5 countries in a little over 4 years. The Canadians, for some reason, have really good statistics on bullying rates. After she's done her work, bullying rates come down and stay down. But what does she do? She brings an infant, less than 1 year old, at the beginning of the school year, to the class. and the infant wears a little T-shirt that is labeled The Professor. So The Professor resides on a green blanket, is accompanied by mom, occasionally dad. And the first graders or third graders have the responsibility, not the teacher, of figuring out what the professor is saying, and then later what the professor is feeling. And, you know, it's not often that first graders, or for that matter, any young person is given responsibility. So that catches their attention.
Mm-hmm.
The skill of empathy, which is what we're developing here, is not genetic. It's a learned skill. The drive to be a part of society is genetic. These kids want to be a part of society. All kids do. They immediately intuit that this is important. And this is not so much cognitive as it is limbic learning. And so they're experiencing, they're feeling their way. Infants are really good at nonverbal communication. And you have the role modeling of the mom and the infant, which is probably the strongest empathetic tie that exists. So this is very powerful, but it's also really simple. All Mary Gordon asks is a couple of hours a month for 8 months, and you have it. The kids have grasped empathy, and they're on a different path. Even if they couldn't get it at home because their parents don't have it, or in the street, or in the school before that. We've got 30% roughly of the world's people marginalized. And it's not because they don't know computer science. Anyone can learn computer science, more or less. But if you don't have this skill, you're going to hurt people, and you're going to disrupt institutions, and that's it for you. They won't tolerate it. You're out. It doesn't matter how much knowledge you have. So, now that's one person with a simple idea, and she is going to change the world. But it's not an idea that anyone who was with us could not have come up with if they just gave themselves permission to ask the question and then keep at it. All right, so I'll give you some other examples just to give you a sense of diversity. Well, the first one is actually a close fit. So Jill Violette in the Californian. And I don't know if her work is in Baltimore yet, but it's certainly in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks it's a mistake to drop recess.
To drop recess?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think kids should have a right to play. She was allowed to play boys' games when she was 11-year-old, and she thought that was pretty important. So she is very successful at this. She gets principals to cough up $24,000. She hires a local and trains a local young person. And after a couple of weeks, the recess space begins to have islands of kids playing games. And after 3 to 6 months, that's 70-80% of the space. Okay, well, that's good. But think about it. How do children practice empathy? Group play turns out to be pretty important. Oh, so these two pieces fit together. Mary helps young children grasp empathy, and Jill is putting in place one of the mechanisms that's really important for them to practice it. And Eric Dawson in Boston has got a similar program, but aimed for the classes. And Molly Barker in Charlotte is focused on 5th to 8th grade girls who tend to lose self-confidence. The mean girl syndrome is, of course, the opposite of the empathetic human being. Now, I go on. There are 500 out of the 3,000 DeShope Fellows focused on children and young people.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
When you look at these stories, you can see something. There's a pattern here. Every young child must master empathy. Every teenager has to be practicing empathy, teamwork, leadership, change-making. If they're going to be a contributor in a world defined by change, by the time they're 30, a 15-year-old today has to practice this. You don't get it by reading a book. You've got to practice it. You've got to have your own idea for a tutoring service. a virtual radio station, get your friends together, make it happen, then you know you're a change maker. You just practice the skills. And all 20, 25 other kids who are with you, they've been practicing empathy and teamwork and getting the idea they can do it. You get five or six in a middle school or high school, no guarantees. You know, Captain Klieg is running the school, it won't work. But in most cases, you can tip the culture, the youth culture, so it's normal for young people and expected for them to, oh, there's a problem, let's get together and fix it. So this is in turn critical. If the country is going to be competitive in 15 years, it has to have a population with these skills. Now, the old paradigm of growing up, learn knowledge, learn rules, doesn't help. The faster the world changes, which is, the rate of change is escalating, still exponentially, and ditto the number of change makers and the combination of change makers. So the 15-year-old that is your friend today is in terrible shape by the time she's 30 if she doesn't have these skills, and so is the country. So we have a new paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
Success in growing up, yes, you've got to know knowledge and rules. That's not bad, but it's not enough. You've now got to be able to be a change maker, to have practiced being a change maker before you turn adult. And as a child, before you become a young person, you have to grasp and practice and get really good at a very sophisticated learned skill, the skill of empathy. Now, that's a different definition of growing up. And parents and young people and educators and policy people all have to grab that. So what I've just done is given you an example. The individual stories are really powerful. They have a big impact. But when you step back, as we are able to do as a community of the world's leading social entrepreneurs, you can see the big pattern.
Yeah.
And then you can see where you got to go. And then the next step, which is what we're working on now, is how do we actually tip the world? So all the fellows I've just described to you, and plus one other American, Daryl Hammond of Washington, and one Mexican colleague, is the leadership team in North America for the larger group of Ashoka fellows. How do we, in the next 5 years, go from the situation where virtually no principal anywhere knows they're failing if they've got one second grader who hasn't grasped empathy, to a situation where 80% of the principals know that and they know what to do? We know what to do. That isn't the problem. It's not expensive. It's not complicated. It doesn't upset the unions or anyone else. It is really simple, but you got to see it first. And so we're involved in all across the world collaborative entrepreneurship. How can we, as a community of entrepreneurs working on this problem in many different ways, come together to figure out how you tip the world? And what you got to do is get 5% of the influential schools, all sorts, you know, religious, government, horrible schools, neighborhoods, ones that are really, when you ask who would you follow, you get those 50, 100 schools in America out of the 90,000 elementary schools, get them to do it. Then you get some of the key journalists, you maybe, to say, boy, this is a fundamental pattern change. This is really important. Our readers should know about this. Parents should know this is important. And no, it's not enough to say, don't do that because I told you not to do it and there's a punishment coming. That's the old rules and punishment model.
Mm-hmm.
In a world of empathy-based ethics, you've got to say, you know, as my parents did to me on a number of occasions, how do you think Peggy felt when you did that? It's a different question. And similarly for a parent who's got a 15-year-old, teenagers, thank God, haven't stopped noticing that there are problems. So at some point, your 15-year-old daughter is going to say to you, oh, this is a mess. Fill in the blank, but the this is.
Right.
And if you say to her, well, why don't you get your friends together and go and solve it? Who, me? Yes, you. way, this is the most important thing you're doing. Can piano practice? This is really important. This is the key set of skills that you've got to have. And I'm sorry if the school is behind in understanding this, but this is really key. And you go for it. Now, any parent can do that. And they're helping their daughter get the most important gift, which is the gift of being a powerful person who can really contribute, who has the skills to be able to contribute.
Bill Drayton, it's been a pleasure. I really wish we didn't have to have so short a time. There's so much more I want to talk to you about, but I do appreciate you taking this time with us.
Well, thank you for what you're doing.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.